You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guests are Andy Bryant and Charlie Maurer, co-authors of The TV Brand Builders, How to Win Audiences and Influence Viewers. Andy Bryant is managing director of Redbee, a London-based, internationally acclaimed creative agency specializing in marketing and design for TV brands. He is a recognized thought leader in his field and frequent speaker at leading industry conferences globally on TV brand strategy, marketing, and creativity. He is an honorary professor of film and TV studies at the University of Nottingham in the UK. Charlie Maurer is exec creative director of Redbee, responsible for their global creative output. Acknowledged world leaders in channel branding and entertainment marketing, they have worked in over 30 countries with clients including BBC, UK TV, NBC Universal, and Fox, winning a myriad of creative awards, including European Agency of the Year, for four successive years. A BAFTA nominee and former Promax UK chairman, Charlie has lectured around the world, including for a variety of universities, for TEDx Talks, the BFI, and D&AD. Andy and Charlie, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you very much for having us.
I am so thrilled to have you here. And as you can tell from the intro, I start every show talking to our audience of brand builders. And here you two have a book with brand builders right in the title, but not just any brand builders, TV brand builders. So I will let you two fight it out or flip a coin for telling me, or take turns simply, telling me what the big idea is behind your new book.
The clue is very much in the title, Nick. We were told early on by our publisher that the days of clever book titles are long gone, and it's all about Google algorithm searches now. So it's very much about an industry that we've worked in for a combined 30 years probably, where brands are as important as they are in any other sector of marketing, if not more so, in a age of a plethora of choice of where there's more TV content than ever before. We wanted to talk to and share best practice with around 50 of the kind of leading marketers and creative people working around the world, getting viewers, getting eyeballs, persuading people to come and spend time with them. That's it in a nutshell.
That's cool. So does that follow the structure of the book then? Kind of, is it broken into segments with various leaders, or?
Yes, Nick, it's broadly broken down into four sections. The first section looks at the whole concept of marketing in the world of television, because, you know, if you think about it, marketing came quite late to the world of television.
Yeah.
You know, broadcasters traditionally, both in the US and in our home country of the UK and across Europe, tended not to be very sophisticated marketers. In fact, we observe in the book that the BBC, the UK's public service broadcaster, and a very close customer of ours, it took them until the early 1990s before they appointed anybody in that organization with the word marketing in their title. Which is extraordinary if you think about, you know, big organizations like automotive or packaged goods manufacturers, So marketing came very late. So we observe that, and then section two really looks at the marketing of TV channels as brands. And we look at channels as various as USA Network and FX networks here in the US, at the BBC, at Channel 4 in the UK. And we look at the different aspects of marketing channels. Section 3 looks at program genres. So we talk about promoting genres like drama or comedy or sport or children's programs, looking at the techniques that marketers use to promote those shows and those series. And then in section 4, we look ahead. We look at some of the recent changes happening in the market, in the industry, clearly the impact of digital, of social media. And we even dare to write a chapter at the very end about the future of TV marketing and how we see things developing over the coming years.
Well, it's interesting when you break it down like that and you think about TV brand builders, there's really a lot of different slices of that, because you do have the great big networks, and even between that you have traditional networks, content providers like you talked about, BBC USA, but you also have, you know, Netflix and Amazon and others entering the fray, and then individually you have the various programs within that, and then I guess it kind of leads back to that disruption on the digital side from those players like Netflix and Amazon as well. So it is all of that, here's the big kind of beard-stroking question, if any of us had any beards, what is, you know, is all of this TV as you see it?
I think it's all TV. We could go down a very long semantic rabbit hole here, but to tell you a true anecdote, I walked into I've got two boys who are 11 and 13, and I walked in to find them in a sofa bed at their mother-in-law's house, one of them with an iPad and one of them with my laptop. And I said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're watching TV." Now, one of them was watching a YouTube vlogger in partnership with a meat-based snack doing a entertaining vlog about an imaginary robot, and the other one was watching, you know, live gaming on a video game channel. And for them, that's TV. TV is not the big box in the corner of the living room. It's just an audio-visual experience, really. So, yeah, all of those things that you listed, I think, are TV. And the book really crosses from those you know, really big, powerful brands that could be Dancing with the Stars or Doctor Who on a global scale as individual programs, and the importance of ordering and kind of coherent design identities and a unique tone of voice. All of those skills are still brought to bear in a program world as much as they are building distinctive, you know, cable channel or network identities.
Well, and I think that you talk about kind of marketing coming late to TV, but I also feel like branding also. I think, you know, it could be a bit more broad when you had only a few major networks that really had everything. So nobody was as focused as they should be. But as you listed, even those examples in there of some of those niche brands, or at least I feel that they are trying to brand themselves in a more unique way, like USA, like FX. I feel like networks have to be more of a defined brand than perhaps they were in years past. Is that what you found?
I absolutely would agree with that, and I think they've had moments in the sun where they've really tried to find a distinctive voice. And it's you know, the broader your target audience and the broader your programming genres that you have to embrace, in some ways, obviously, the harder it is to be, you know, really on point as a brand compared to an FX or to a genre channel like you know, Discovery. And I think there have been times when the big four US networks have stood for a clearly defined brand, but I think they will increasingly have to work hard at meaning something to people beyond the aggregation of their content.
Well, you talk about meaning something to people, and that's exactly where my head was going too, and thinking about this, because you talk about meaning something to people, and I think because of the digital side of the disruption and how we're connected with brands through various forms of social media, I think of, you know, several networks that I'm connected with that deliver me, you know, continuations of that brand story on a daily basis through what they're posting on Facebook, on Instagram. And, you know, it seems like the really effective ones are the ones that can reach beyond and have me following, you know, both Doctor Who and the BBC.
I think, again, Nick, you've touched on one of the themes of the book, and the I think we're moving from, I mean, one of the things we say at Redbee, the business we run, is that we're moving from a campaign-based model of marketing to almost a semi-publishing model. And many of our clients are sharing the same experiences where, in the old days, I mean, maybe exaggerating to make the point, but if you were launching a major new drama series, you know, our team might spend 3 or 4 weeks or 5 weeks developing a big campaign, and then it might run for a few weeks, and then that would be the end of it. And then you'd wait for a few months for season two to come along. Whereas these days, you almost have to be having almost continuous dialogue with your viewers and your fans, and the process can start at the very beginning of the inception of a new season. You know, that you can be creating content based on cast interviews or behind the scenes or going on location, or and just keeping that dialogue going on almost a daily basis with your audience. It demands a fundamentally different set of disciplines from marketers.
I think it also it really increasingly is blurring, in a way that is unique to television in some ways, you know, what is content and what is marketing. When you look at, I don't know, one of my favorite shows like Veep on HBO, that the Twitter accounts of the fictional characters and the story world they've built around Jonah's, you know, running for Congress, as you know, websites that you can go visit, that's all marketing, you know, that's all. And yet it is, you know, Andy writes about in the book, it's this kind of grand story world that you build around the half hour show, that makes it just a really rich and rewarding experience for the fans and the viewers. But where marketing begins and product ends is really blurring.
Well, and I think that disruption is certainly a part of TV, but I think everywhere where you've got to, I mean, it's really about content creation and whether, you know, you are, you know, a garage door spring manufacturer and have to share more of your expertise and go mining for those stories that might be hidden in and around your product. You have to kind of find that continuation online as well. I do think the lines are blurring, and certainly, especially when it comes to the personnel involved in all of this as well. Because, I mean, I think, you know, Veep is a great example. I think they've always had great campaigns running, but especially this season, which you mentioned with Jonah's congressional campaign, the websites and. You know, and then I think you've seen them actually take that a level further, and why that's kind of worth the energy too, because they've gotten additional coverage on the marketing, on the content around the show as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of the work that we've done for brands has been in order to be able to talk about the marketing, so that you're actually doing. I'm thinking of a second screen app we did for Fox for The Walking Dead globally. You know, they really commissioned it as a piece, clearly because it would, you know, have an enjoyable level of interaction with fans, but also because it gave them, in a mid-season hiatus, something new to talk about. And the, you know, the people are really looking for that all the time. And Yeah, Veep's a great example. I mean, the fact that I follow both Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Twitter and Selena Meyer, you know, you're following, and they're both sometimes tweeting almost identical pictures with subtly nuanced changes of wording.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, it's like, I mean, because, you know, usually there'd be more of a, in the traditional days that you speak of, there's would be a much bigger firewall up between the creative operation of a show and the marketing side of things, both creative, but in different ways. But now I think, as you talk about those lines blurring, I mean, I think it's important for all parties to understand, you know, the Selena Meyer voice.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the smart showrunners are really getting that, and really embrace marketing as part of the voice.
Well, and that feels like a bit of a shift too, that, you know, kind of not thinking, you know, even marketing came late to the game, but not thinking of us marketers as the other, kind of the villainous parties from the network too.
I think, Nick, one of our 50 interviewees, because in our book, The TV Brand Builders, we talked to 50 of the world's leading practitioners of TV marketing. And in fact, a guy called Carsten Lackner, who's from Denmark, actually. He worked at DR, the Danish public service broadcaster, home of really high-quality drama like The Killing and The Bridge. And he was talking about how it took the world of social media to actually, for the first time in DR, get the program people and the marketing people to really work closely together in a way that should have been happening 20 years ago. Because when you start to create social campaigns, you absolutely, the option of the drama producers making a show and then dumping that show on the marketing team to promote, it can't work like that in a kind of always on social media world. So, you know, for us, that was quite a telling observation.
And it was hearing about some of the showrunners like Ryan Murphy, who, you know, the marketing team there says, you know, he almost thinks of the key art first. You know, that's how the show comes into being in his head, is that, you know, is the key art. And I think there've been a few people, I mean, we talk in the book quite a lot about Mad Men, obviously being obsessed with advertising as all of us are, but Matthew Weiner is again someone else who is really, you know, he gets marketing, he understands the power, well, obviously the power of the title, but the key art, and they did some fantastic specially shot promos for the last season that were very much on a sort of single theme of restlessness and the search for contentment and happiness. You know, I think that a lot of that is to do with him as a showrunner, kind of understanding that you need a single simple message in 30 seconds that like any good advertiser or marketer would learn in kind of high school.
Well, I think when executed correctly, you know, you talk about the lines blurring, but there really shouldn't be lines. It is really a piece of this continuous story. I mean, Mad Men's a great example, especially with the big themes of that last season of contentment too, that it's not just, you know, Sunday night at 9, that it really is sharing some of the bigger stories and the ideas behind those stories and themes and topics more, that it is less shilling for the show and more a continuation of the storytelling as well.
That's definitely right. If you're going to keep people watching for 7 seasons, for 24 episodes a season, you know, you need those big, we talk about the kind of the big questions that, there's a piece of a chapter called Unraveling the Helix, which was one of the great phrases that one of our brand builders gave to us. And it is, you know, it's, you know, will House ever come to terms with the demons? You know, what is the island in Lost? And, you know, will Don Draper ever be unmasked? You know, those are the things that keep you going for what's a fundamentally huge commitment of time compared to virtually any other media form, really.
Yeah, well, and it is that continuation. I mean, that gets into the bigger issue, too, of timing, that it's less about, you know, kind of these short bursts leading up to, you know, a new season, a new show, each week's episode. I mean, I feel like we're going to Veep, but it's easy and it's top of mind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they are sharing things throughout the entire year to keep that story top of mind as well.
That's right. There's a lot of work now down in between seasons, whether it's sort of generating extra webisode material or, you know, celebrating kind of fan fiction or, there are brands, and we work quite closely with the BBC with Doctor Who, which is one of their big global properties. And they sometimes, because of filming commitments or showrunner commitments, you know, they will have quite long hiatuses between seasons.
Right. It's
probably a little bit less disciplined than the American market in terms of the deals they're locked into early on. And it's it's vital then for marketing to be working across all platforms to, you know, keep things bubbling away so that you don't get too much of a dip in loyalty.
But there's no Doctor Who in 2016.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but. I mean, as a fan, I'm having a panic attack, but then also irrelevant to this conversation, because that's kind of the biggest version of kind of the challenge today of keeping that conversation going. Luckily, with, I think, you say less discipline maybe than other shows, but I think with a show like Doctor Who, you talk about shows as brands. I mean, that certainly has some strong brand DNA and history and everything else working for it. And I think you talk about some of the differences in timing. You know, this week announcing that Curb Your Enthusiasm's coming back after I don't know how many years away. So that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, with Doctor Who, it's very much about, you know, a brand, a program that was created before marketing existed in television, but that just happens to have all of the right DNA for a good brand in terms of, you know, iconography that is unique and ownable from TARDISes to sonic screwdrivers, you know, with a sort of a built-in cast renewal in its DNA as well, which is absolutely inspired. We've just had a blast working on it. We worked on the 50th anniversary campaign where we virtually reunited all of the Doctors and almost broke the internet. I certainly broke some Tumblr records for that campaign. But it is a show that is, you know, created in the 60s, but the marketer's dream.
I love that, and I'm a huge fan, and I was probably consuming all of that all of that 50th anniversary content. So speaking of 50 and all of the interviews that you did, can you each share an interview, a particular one along your journey in writing this book that surprised you, whether that was something someone said, a topic that emerged? If there's one thing, if we have a short elevator ride and I say, tell me a story you heard, which ones stand out?
Well, I think, Nick, for me, my general observation, and I'm not sure it was a surprise, but I think it was for people who both believe passionately in the power of TV brands and television marketing, was an almost unanimous sense of optimism and positivity about the future of television and television marketing and, you know, television channels. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently, and I'm sure, you know, you've covered it in various ways about the death of television, the inexorable rise and growth of digital platforms, of, you know, streaming is going to kill linear TV. And what we found was a very different picture. Our TV brand builders were very, you know, from the US to Denmark to Germany to the UK and beyond, had a really unanimous sense of there's something inherently valuable about good television. There is something inherently that we as human beings enjoy, which is that shared viewing. It's actually, yes, we're all increasingly choosing to watch box sets when we want to watch them, in the sequence we want to watch them. but there's still a very powerful phenomenon, which is the shared viewing experience and sitting down together and feeling that sense of unity with millions of other people, be that watching a live show, or just sharing the narrative arc of a drama. So I think that would be my observation, just that general sense of real passion and enthusiasm for the business we all work in.
I'll give you a more specific answer. Actually, I was just thinking of one of the ones that I talked to, he's top of mind because he was sitting watching the England Wales game in the this morning over breakfast. Called Robin Garnett, who's creative director of Discovery, and what I thought was really interesting is you could sort of chart a path through certainly some of the factual channels where they, for a period, they were very driven by a hit show would land and then there would be a raft of copycat shows, and so you would get virtually indistinguishable shows about lumberjacks or people who live in swamps or pawn shops or
storage container
wars, you know, and they were rated, and so the people made more of them, and they rated, and the quest for the ratings gold sort of really drove a lot of that business. But I think it was, from my observation, to the detriment of the brands, because they didn't really fit neatly with a kind of strong masthead brand, lighthouse identity. But there's been a real shift back, certainly talking to Robin about Discovery, to around this brand statement now of make your world bigger. And it's absolutely about kind of going back to core purpose and, you know, their mission, and that's now starting to really drive commissioning. It's starting to drive their behavior in terms of creating, you know, entertaining digital properties, and kind of people that they're hiring as presenters. Everything is being driven by a sense of brand and by a sense of, you know, kind of marketing first. And that was really interesting to me to see that is, maybe it's just a cyclical thing, but it certainly felt like, you know, it was the marketeer's time again.
I love that. It's the marketer's time again.
Yeah.
So speaking of time, as we start to wrap up, as we do on the On Brand podcast, wanted to ask you each for a brand that has made you smile recently. I don't know who wants to go first. Andy, well, Charlie, I should probably...
I'll go first, Nick, and I'm going to stay true to our brand, and I'm going to mention a brand that we write about in the book, partly because we spent time talking to the very talented EVP of marketing yesterday, and that's a brand called True TV, a channel in the US that I have to say we were not particularly well aware of as Brits when we started on this journey, and I think it's a remarkable case study of transformation anyway from being... starting life as a channel called Court TV and running, you know, 24-hour courtroom drama, or, well, live courtroom coverage, actually. But I think what one of the great stories in the book is the way that they use social media to quote them, to troll the trolls. And, you know, listeners in the US may well be aware that the March Madness College Basketball Championship is shown on True TV. And it's at that time of the year when they have a huge spike in social media mentions, not always positive, because what people tend to say is, you know, where is True TV? Or even less polite derivations of that. What is True TV? Where do I find this thing called True TV? And last year they took that head on, hashtag have you found True TV? And really very, very cleverly and authentically responded to the trolls in a way that generated them huge unpaid coverage. And then the thing that really made me smile this year was when this year's campaign, again for March Madness, was when they created a series of promo spots, their on-screen talent, just emphasizing the fact that True TV really is a thing. And for me, that was very very smart. I think that the key lesson for me, Nick, with that was how being very self-aware and actually responding authentically to your audience and not just, people in a vacuum creating social media content that has no real engagement. They really did put a smile on my face doing that.
So my brand that made me smile, it was a great spot that I saw yesterday, again, from the Peerless FX Network, who really are kind of head and shoulders the acclaimed marketing brand building team in the US. And they did a spot that we obviously hadn't seen in the UK in the final episode of The People versus OJ Simpson. They did a very clever spot, which they specially shot with the cast of their new show, Atlanta, where, so right off the back of the verdict, so the verdict happened, they went to an ad break, and first in break were the rappers in Atlanta watching TV, staring in disbelief, and one of them saying, "Oh, that's a fairly lame ending." And someone goes, no, it was real. It happened. And it was just that absolute knowledge of what the audience was doing, thinking, being perfectly in tune with them, introducing them to some new people that they want you to spend time with a new show, and, you know, invested in it to shoot something specially. And I just thought it was just inspired. And, you know, one of those, I wish I'd made that moment.
Well, that is a great example and highlights another great thing about TV brands is you have some great creativity you can apply around cross promotion as well.
Yeah,
indeed.
So, Andy, Charlie, where can we point people to learn more about your book?
Well, Nick, in the US, they can quite simply go to Amazon and look for the TV Brand Builders. And
our publisher is Kogan Page. Otherwise, on their site, the TV Brand Builders, where particularly for educational establishments, because we're hoping there's a lot in here for a kind of more academic audience as well, and they can get downloaded extra online material beyond the book.
And finally, just for some blog highlights, they could go to our website, redbeecreative.com.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes for this week's episode. Andy, Charlie, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. This past week, Sean Carpenter gave us a listen to our episode featuring Jen Slasky of Spiceworks. Sean, as always, thanks for listening. And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything Andy, Charlie, and I talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. And finally, On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Palizzi, and Ginny Dietrich in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.